out and close with and destroy the enemy as viciously as possible from moment one. And that's why we see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs. You have a choice as we loiter over the top of Tehran, as the president talked about your future. The president has made it clear that you will not have a nuclear weapon. The War Department agrees. Our job is to ensure that.
And this is my video update on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 25th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And today is March the 25th. It is Greek Independence Day. That's right, Greek Independence Day. Even the cats recognize that today is the day that Greece got its independence. Happy Independence Day to all the Greeks around the world. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with Trump's Iran 15-point Hizplan. Not to be confused with the Ukraine 20-point Hizplan. But if you read the 15-point peace plan and you're familiar with the Ukraine 20-point peace plan, you would think that it is pretty much the same peace plan, right? It's very similar, the 15-point peace plan that Israeli outlets and the New York Times, that they talked about yesterday, that the Trump administration has prepared for Iran, and that 20-point peace plan that was presented to Russia from Witkoff and Kushner. I wouldn't be surprised if Witkoff called up the Green Goblin and asked him for a copy of the 20-point peace plan, maybe because Witkoff deleted the 20-point peace plan from his computer. So he called up the Green Goblin and said, "I'm putting together a 15-point peace plan for the Iran war. Mr. Zelensky, do you happen to have the 20-point peace plan? I would like to use that as a template." Yes, of course, Mr. Witkoff, I've got the 20-point peace plan. That was a good peace plan. I think you will be able to get many, many good ideas to present to Iran. I will have Podolyak email you the 20-point peace plan. You're very welcome, Mr. Witkoff. Yeah, so the 15-point peace plan. It is much of the same of what we have been hearing from the Trump administration over the past 3 to 6 months of negotiations, if you want to call it that. The demands of the United States for Iran to stop enriching uranium, to have zero uranium enrichment, the IAEA to enter the country and to inspect everything for the nuclear facilities to be completely destroyed, even though Trump claims that he obliterated the facilities. The plan calls for the complete destruction of those facilities. The United States takes control of the uranium. The Iranian government is not allowed to have any ballistic missiles up to a certain number. They put a cap on the number of ballistic missiles. They also put a limit on the range as well. But the ballistic missile issue in this 15-point peace plan will be discussed later. The civilian nuclear facilities, they will fall under the control of the United States. Where have I read that one before? Where have I read that one before? Just like Zaporozhye and the trick they tried to play on Russia, where the Trump administration in the 20-point peace plan said that that the ZNPP would fall under the control of the United States. In this plan, it talks about civilian nuclear energy, electricity, nuclear power, falling under the help of the United States. And this is the facility that is Russian, the Russian facility, which was built by Russia, still operating with Russia. This would somehow go to the United States. We don't really have the details. But that's in the plan as well. There would be a ceasefire, and then there would be a one-month negotiation if Iran was to agree to this. Where have I read that one before? Ceasefire, exactly what they tried to pitch to Russia. Same exact thing. Get a ceasefire, go through the negotiations, and iron out all the details. Of course, we know what happens to Iran when they enter into negotiations with the United States. We know what has happened the two times before when they entered into negotiations with Witkoff and Kushner. We had two U.S. attacks. Natanz, Isfahan, and Fordo will be decommissioned and destroyed. I already said that. Iran's going to abandon all of their proxy networks as well. That's something else that this plan calls for. The Strait of Hormuz will remain open, and it will be a free maritime zone. No one will be able to block the Strait of Hormuz ever again. It'll be free international maritime zone under the control of Donald J. Trump, most likely. But that's what they're saying in this plan, a free maritime zone. So now Iran is making $2 million per tanker that passes through the Strait of Hormuz. And the United States is telling them to turn it over, to give it up to the international community. And you know what they mean when they use the word international community, right? Of course we do. So that's pretty much the plan. And what does Iran get in return? Maybe some sanctions relief. I talked about the assistance for civilian nuclear energy, the Bushehr. That's the facility that I was talking about. And that's pretty much it. That's it. That's what they get in return. Some sanctions relief. The fear of snapback sanctions will be lifted. The threat of the sanctions snapping back will be lifted over time if Iran behaves. The same thing that they told Russia, that they demanded of Russia in the 20-point peace plan. That's the pitch that is being made to Iran in order to end the conflict. And if Iran were to agree to this, in much the same way that if Russia were to have agreed to the 20-point peace plan, then Iran will be severely weakened. It will not have any means to defend itself because the ballistic missile program will be limited, capped and limited. The civilian energy would be under the control of Trump. The Strait of Hormuz will be under the control of the international community, under the control of Trump. And then they would be attacked again. That's exactly what would happen. And they would be attacked over and over and over again until some sort of government collapse or regime change were to happen. So obviously Iran is not going to accept this 15-point peace plan. They have their own demands. I've talked about Iran's demands. I'm sure you know about their demands, the U.S. bases, security guarantees, reparations. We know Iran's demands, which are demands that the Trump administration will never be able to accept.
So that is where we are.
The venue for negotiations, if Iran were to agree to this 15-point plan, the negotiations would take place most likely in Pakistan, Turkey. They're trying to mediate, but it looks like Pakistan would be the country that would host the talks, if these talks ever were to happen, if Iran ever were to accept these terms as a basis for negotiations. The New York Times has an article, United States said to have sent Iran a plan to end the Middle East war. The 15-point plan was delivered via Pakistan, whose army chief has emerged as the key interlocutor between the United States and Iran, officials say. And the New York Times talks about a one-month ceasefire followed by talks on a 15-point plan. Strict nuclear limits, no enrichment, dismantling key sites in exchange for lifting of sanctions, and support for civilian nuclear projects. Israel is suspicious of this plan. They don't like it. They don't like it. Netanyahu doesn't like it because, get this, Netanyahu believes that if Iran were to agree to these terms for negotiation, that Trump would actually enter into those negotiations, and he may wind down the conflict, even though the plan, the 15 points, are completely in favor of the United States. Israel is still afraid that the Trump administration would enter into talks with Iran. They don't want the Trump administration entering into any kind of negotiation with Iran. They have this fear that if there were talks, Trump would somehow make more concessions or fold to Iranian demands. It really does remind me of the whole Project Ukraine 20-point peace plan negotiations. It really, really does. And Iran, well, they are obviously suspicious of the Trump administration and the United States because of the past two previous negotiations where the United States launched an attack. And of course, you have the buildup, the military buildup that is currently taking place. The Greek flag, everybody. Iran suspects Trump's peace talk is another trick. The trickery of Trump. That's my word. The Trump foreign policy trickery. Come on, Axios. Give me some credit for the trickery of Trump. Trump's foreign policy trickery. So Iran is seeing this big military buildup, and they think that all of these negotiations and all of these talks and the one-month ceasefire would just give the United States time to rearm and then to launch a devastating attack against Iran as these negotiations were taking place in most likely Pakistan. Pentagon orders troop deployment as Pakistan offers to host talks. The Pentagon said it was sending 2,000 airborne troops to the Mideast. President Trump appeared to support Pakistan's offer to broker talks with Iran. They see all the troop deployments, the 5,000 Marines, which should be in the region by now. You have another 3,000 U.S. Troops that the Pentagon is going to be sending to the region. And there's constant talk about more troops being deployed. Infantry being deployed. Of course, Iran is looking at all of this and saying, What talks are you guys talking about? What negotiation talks are you guys talking about? You're building up the military as we're going back and forth with these alleged talks and negotiations. The military buildup continues. Here is a post from Muin Rabbani. If press reports are accurate, I think the diplomatic proposal put forward by the U.S. is outstanding. It's direct, simple, and to the point. a one-month ceasefire to allow the U.S. and Israel to rearm, extendable if Israel and the U.S. need additional time to rearm. Iran unconditionally accepts the U.S. proposal, surrendering its sovereignty, alliances, and ability to defend itself, and the war on Iran resumes. What's not to like? A lot of sarcasm in that post, but 100% accurate. It's a very, very bad deal for Iran. Yeah, the deal also, the 15-point plan, also calls on Iran to get rid of all of their proxies, which would further weaken Iran. So Pete Hegseth and President Trump were speaking to the media, and they were talking about the conflict, the war, as well as the possible negotiations that are taking place or could be taking place. And Pete Hegseth told the media that the United States, we negotiate with bombs. That is what Hegseth said. Yo, listen up, you media fools. Hey, pass me that beer. I am going to shotgun that can of beer right now in front of all of you media people. And once I'm done chugging that beer, I'm going to tell you exactly how we negotiate. All right. Here's how we negotiate. We don't talk. We negotiate with bombs. That's right. We negotiate with bombs. Bombs, bombs, bombs. Get rid of him. Trump, get rid of him. He's not going to get rid of him, but he should get rid of him. Pete Hegseth. Absolutely. Cuckoo for Cocoa Pops. So the story about Saudi Arabia and getting involved in the conflict, I talked about this yesterday. There is another story about Saudi Arabia. Saudis getting involved in the conflict was from the Wall Street Journal. Hey, my friend. How you doing? That was from the Wall Street Journal. This story is from the New York Times. And the New York Times claims that Saudi Arabia is actually pushing Trump to continue to escalate, to continue the conflict, and to finish off Iran. Because according to the NYT, Saudi Arabia views this as a historic opportunity. A historic opportunity to destroy Iran. This is what the New York Times is running with. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, is pushing Donald Trump to continue the war with Iran, viewing it as a historic opportunity to reshape the region. Saudi Arabia's foreign ministry took issue with this New York Times report, and they denied it all. They denied that its leadership wants to prolong a war with Iran. And they claim that they are not trying to escalate the conflict, the exact opposite. They want the conflict to end. So I thought I would do an update on that story. We are getting reports that the Strait of Hormuz is indeed confirmation, not reports, because I talked about the reports yesterday. We are getting confirmation that the Strait of Hormuz is open to non-hostile ships. That's right. Non-hostile ships can now pass through the Strait of Hormuz. $2 million in Chinese yuan, and you get passage. And one of the countries that is going to get passage through the Strait of Hormuz is a European country. Can you guys guess which European country has been offered passage through the Strait of Hormuz? Spain. That's right. Spain will be probably the only European country that will be offered passage through the Strait of Hormuz. It's a friend's pass. It's a friend's pass that they've created. So you have to be a friend.
And of course, you have to pay. But if you're a friend and if you want to pay the $2 million, then you could pass through the Strait of Hormuz. No problem. You can get your energy. Iran is generously allowing its friends like Spain, India, and China to use the Strait of Hormuz. More so for Spain. Yeah, China was a given. India is a given. Russia is a given. But you see, Sanchez standing up to Trump actually paid off. He will have access through the Strait of Hormuz, or he will gain transit through the Strait of Hormuz. Russia is selling its oil at a premium. It's selling its oil at a premium to India, which is something that the EU and the United States, even under Bidenopolis, worked hard to prevent. But now the oil is going to India at a very high price, and India is snapping up the Russian oil, and they're refining the Russian oil. And the Philippines is also snapping up Russian oil, as is South Korea. Russian oil commands first premium in India since Ukraine war. So let's discuss the Druzhba oil pipeline, which has still not started. They were going to fix it. Hungary was going to send a team to inspect the damage. They never made it. Then Ursula sent a letter to the Green Goblin, urging the Green Goblin to fix it. And the Green Goblin said, okay, Ursula, take a look and I'll fix it. But still no oil from the Druzhba towards Hungary and Slovakia. And so what Orban is going to do, and he announced this today, is that he will halt gas supplies to Ukraine until oil transit via the Druzhba pipeline resumes. Now, my understanding of the gas that goes to Ukraine, it's a reverse gas flow, and they reverse the gas that was going Ukraine to Europe, Russia, Ukraine, Europe, and not reverses from Europe through Hungary, and it goes to Ukraine. And it's quite a significant amount of energy that passes through Hungary and makes its way to Ukraine, and Orban will put a stop to the gas that is transiting his territory to go to Ukraine until Ukraine opens up the Druzhba oil pipeline. Orban needs the oil. Hungary needs the oil. Slovakia needs the oil. And Hungary's going to need the gas too. So they'll store the gas that was meant to go to Ukraine. I guess they'll keep it in Hungary. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But there you have it. That's Orban's latest move in the Druzhba oil pipeline saga. All right, let's talk about what is happening with Project Ukraine. What do you think? Should we talk about Project Ukraine? Big Russian drone strike into Ukraine yesterday. 948 drones were launched into Ukraine. They hit just about every region. Kiev and Odessa and Lvov. Lvov was hit hard. And this was in two waves. The first wave was about 400 drones, followed by around 25 missiles. And then a second wave of drones hit. Zelensky claims that Ukraine air defenses shot down 906 drones out of 948 that were launched. The photo and video evidence shows otherwise. The photos and videos shows a lot of damage happening all across Ukraine from these strikes. But that's Ukrainian air defense math right there. 948 drones, 906 shot. This was one of the largest, if not the largest, drone strike into Ukraine. I believe it was the second largest a drone strike into Ukraine. Just under 1,000 drones were launched. Of course, Ukraine is launching hundreds of drones into Russia almost every day or almost every other day. We're not talking about 50 drones or 100 drones. Ukraine has been launching 200, 300, 350 drones into Russia every other day. And they've been targeting deep inside of Russia, targeting Moscow. The other day, they targeted St. Petersburg. The port in St. Petersburg was actually hit. And they also hit another oil facility, a port oil facility in the St. Petersburg region, the port of Ust-Luga on the Baltic Sea. It's 1,000 kilometers from Ukraine. And the drone hit this area as well. They also hit a shipbuilding facility in that area. And there's a lot of drones that have been crashing in Estonia and in the Baltic countries. So you know what a lot of analysts are saying is going on. They're saying, well, there's some analysts that believe the drones are not even launched from Ukraine because it's such a long distance that they're actually being launched from NATO territory. That's one theory that's out there. But there are many analysts who believe that the way Ukraine is avoiding the Russian air defense is that the drones are flying over Eastern Europe, over Poland, over the Baltic countries, and then they make their way into St. Petersburg or towards Moscow. And that's why you are seeing these crashes of drones in Estonia, for example. These are Ukrainian drones that just didn't make it all the way to their target. So I believe that actually makes sense. That makes a whole lot of sense. That is why Russia is unable to track these drones and to knock them down before they make their way up to St. Petersburg, to that region, because they're traveling through the airspace of Europe. So I imagine that Russia is going to send a very strongly worded statement to the Baltic countries and to Poland, complaining about how their airspace is being used to cover Ukraine's as cover for Ukrainian drones. So let's walk a little bit. Let's walk a little bit and we'll do some more news. And we'll do a clown world. Big elections in Denmark. And we have another Zelensky curse that happened. Mette Frederiksen, who is very good friends with the Green Goblin, her and her husband, who's doing some sort of Ukraine documentary, which features Le Goblin Ver. Her party did not do well. They came out in first place, but they dropped a lot from the previous vote. The last elections, they got somewhere around 29% of the vote. And this time around, they dropped to 21%. They still might be able to form a government, but they're going to have to put together a very creative coalition in order to form a government. But she was very, very good friends with the Zelensky regime, one of the big supporters of Zelensky. Lots of hugs, lots of Zelensky number five. It's intoxicating. I love that Zelensky number five, said Mette Frederiksen. I love it. Love that Zelensky number five. Of course, she had all of the Greenland stuff that she was dealing with as well, but she was not focusing on Denmark. At least that's what the vote shows. Did not have the support of the people of Denmark. And we'll see if she can put together a coalition. She has resigned. That is why it's an Zelensky curse moment. But if they do manage to form a coalition, her party, then she might become prime minister again. Maybe.
if they could form a coalition. Forming a coalition could take a couple of weeks, maybe even more than a month. It could take some time to actually put a coalition in place. So that is the situation in Denmark. The Social Democrats, at the head of the left-leaning red bloc of parties, now need to convince a veteran pipe-smoking politician who sometimes brushes his teeth with soap, centrist chief Lars Løkke Rasmussen, to hand the party a third term in power after the post-election deal-making. Yeah, they need this centrist party to go along with them to form a coalition if they want to stay in power and if Frederiksen wants another go at prime minister. Even if they do stay in power, her party, she may not be prime minister. Maybe it'll be someone else. So big elections in Denmark. And that will take us, did I get to all the news? I think I got to all the news. That will take us to our clown world. And today's clown world begins with that Trump and Hegseth press conference. I already talked about Hegseth. We negotiate with bombs. That's what Hegseth told the media. Trump told the media that Iran gave him a present. A prize or a present. That's how well these negotiations are going with the new leader, the leader that Trump is picking, the Speaker of the Parliament. Allegedly, that's the guy that Trump is negotiating with. Okay, but things are going so well that, according to Trump, Iran gave him a present, a prize. And Trump said that this present is worth lots of money and it's gas and oil related. That was the statement from U.S. President Trump. We attack you, we bomb you, we go to war with you. But Trump is so good, he's such a good leader, that Iran is now giving him presents and prizes. That's what he wants us to believe. Nobel Prize? Nobel Prize are they giving you? Please tell us. Please tell us. Trump did not want to say what the prize was. He would not say what it was because there is no prize or present. But anyway, let me play you the video of Trump.
Because they're going to make a deal. They're going to make a deal. They did something yesterday that was amazing, actually. They gave us a present. And the president arrived today, and it was a very big present worth a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not going to tell you what that present is, but it was a very significant prize. And they gave it to us, and they said they were going to give it. So that meant one thing to me, we're dealing with the right people.
Is that nuclear related?
No, it wasn't nuclear related. It was oil and gas related. And it was a very nice thing they did. But what it showed me is that we're dealing with the right people.
And that takes us to our second clown world, which is Jake Sullivan appearing with Jon Stewart, Comedy Central, The Daily Show, right? That's Sullivan with Stewart and Jake Sullivan, Jake the Snake. He told Stewart that days before the war started and the U.S. attacked Iran, Oman, which was mediating, actually presented Witkoff and Kushner with a very good deal. Iran agreed to many of the points from the Trump administration that the Trump administration was demanding. And it was a very good deal, according to Sullivan. But Kushner and Witkoff did not understand this. This is what Sullivan told Stewart. They did not understand that what the mediators had handed them from Iran was actually a very, very good deal. Look at
at all the cats. Wow. Where have I wandered off to? The cat world. Cat world in Cyprus. It's a good place to be. So, they didn't understand the favorable, excellent terms that were negotiated, and so they went back to Trump and they started the war. Not much of a clown world, actually, but anyway, that's what Sullivan told Stewart. Here's the interesting part to this story. When the Biden White House was on its way out, when it was exiting in January of 2025, right? Biden had just a couple of more weeks left before he was going to hand over the presidency to Trump. Sullivan, he briefed Biden on Iran, and they were actually discussing an attack against Iran. Here's an article from Axios at the time. Biden discussed plans to strike Iran nuclear sites if Tehran speeds toward bomb. So what was going on back in January of 2025, right before the handoff, was that Sullivan and Biden were actually discussing striking Iran and going to war with Iran. Because what Sullivan, and what he left out from his appearance on The Daily Show, what Sullivan was telling Biden was that Iran is at its weakest. Now is the time to strike. And Iran is going to get a nuclear weapon any day now. Mike Tyson. Iron Mike. So that's what they were saying back then. And the only reason that Biden did not strike at Iran back then was because he did not want to hand off a war to the next president. I don't think it's ever been done where one president, a couple of weeks before he leaves office, starts a war and then hands it off to the next president. So basically they decided, you know what? Trump can deal with it. But they were about to launch an attack against Iran a couple of weeks before Biden was going to leave office for the very same reasons that Trump came up with when it launched its attack this time around against Iran. Iran is weak. In a couple of weeks, they're going to get a nuclear weapon. The threat is imminent. That's what they said a year and a half ago, pretty much. So that was Sullivan. That was Sullivan with Bidenopolis. Bidenopolis. So I think that is everything. And I will end the video there. TheDuran.locals.com. We're on X and we are on Rumble and Telegram. And go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. There's a link in the description box down below. Check us out on Substack as well. I will see everybody tomorrow. It's gonna rain. Take care.